Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turf's Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone Show this evening.
Again, I hope everybody's doing fine. I'm Rob Starr, along with Chris Davies. Chris, how are you tonight?
Pleasant good night, and hello to you too as well, Rob. We're doing fine, thanks.
How's the weather out in California? Just so our listeners know, we are still doing our social distancing, and myself, Chris Davies, and Ms. Chris Austin are all broadcasting from different locations throughout the country. And
miles apart.
And we do have a great engineer, Nick, who's been handling us for a while. And he's a great guy. He takes care of us, and we really appreciate him. But how's the weather out there? It's a little balmy over here tonight. The sky is gray, 108, and it's windy. It looks like it's going to rain.
Not here. It's hot, and we're just keeping tempo on three. That's 1, 2, 3. Fires in the area tonight that are going crazy. One up by Chris Austin. Chris, is any effect from you from that fire up there?
No, the winds have been favorable for us, but they always change. At some point, they will change, I'm sure. But no, we haven't not even smelling it. We don't have orange sun, so it's good.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Chris Austin, who's the purveyor of Maven's Notebook. So welcome, Chris. Is that near Lake Hughes, or is that a different location?
That's the Lake Hughes fire.
Oh, okay. Okay, I've seen that on television today. So anything worthwhile to discuss tonight about water? And I know there always is. And, you know, there's lots of things happening in that. And so, Chris, you want to talk about some things that are happening with about safe drinking water and what they're planning to have a webinar about?
Well, yeah, that's coming up. But actually, I wanted to tell you about the webinar that I did yesterday.
That's more important. Go ahead.
Yeah, because, you know, folks, you got to up your game. I mean, that's the way you stay competitive, right? So I decided that I was going to learn how to run a webinar. And I've teamed up with Don Wright, who you had on a few weeks ago. Yes, of waterrights.net, the guy that covers all the Central Valley water meetings. And we did a webinar that was focused on the San Joaquin Valley Blueprint. And listeners who have been following the Water Zone for some time might remember a special show that Inge Biscona brought on the public record to talk about water issues. On the public record is a blog, a popular blog in the water world. And she has a lot of things to say about the San Joaquin Valley Blueprint, and virtually all of them not really good ones. So it was interesting because I went to, you know, I just ran the webinar platform, and Don Wright asked the questions, but I had some say over who was the panelist and the questions, and so I looked at all of that, and I went out and I read up on, you know, on the public record and other places, and you know, the one thing that seemed to me very glaring is that the San Joaquin Valley Blueprint is more of an idea and not really a document. I mean, when you use the word blueprint, you think, you know, I kind of think there's a document somewhere. So I'm like, so where's your plan? And, you know, they don't really have anything really written up, just a bunch of, you know, nice glossy website and stuff. So it was interesting to hear them talk about, you know, all the ideas. And one of the things that on the public record said is that it seems to be them resurrecting every water project that was ever considered in the Central Valley. And, you know, and And some of those projects are probably not good projects, but I'm not sure that criticism at this point would be fair. I think, you know, we all think differently about things, you know, years later down the road, and what didn't seem feasible or, you know, too costly, you know, 5 years ago when water wasn't so scarce may be more realistic now. You know, people may be more willing to pay for these projects. So I think that the effort overall is good to take a look. This is basically, as I understood it, from the people who came to talk yesterday about it, is, you know, the people in the San Joaquin Valley came to the understanding that if they didn't do anything, the economic impacts would be severe, really severe. I mean, we're talking small towns populated by farm workers, and a lot of people being impacted, not only farmers, not only corporate farmers, but also, you know, regular people. So they're trying to solve the problem. And perhaps they're doing it by trying to think of absolutely every action they could possibly take to address it. And I don't think that's a bad place to be for a starting point. I mean, you should look at what are all your options, and then you start costing them out and start, you know, determining feasibility, and right. And you see where it goes.
You lay it all out on the table, and then you start picking the ones that make sense that you can address, maybe some low-hanging fruit for some of those. That's what it takes.
Yeah, and they're mobilizing because, you know, this is a whole area, a whole region of the state that could suffer great economic harm, you know, and we're talking small disadvantaged communities, and, you know, there's a lot of things at stake here. But also, you know, there is the aspect that they have to live within their means, within their water budget, like a household budget, a water budget. They have to live within those means. And I think that is going to mean that some farmers and some land is going to have to go fallow, but they're hoping to minimize those impacts. So overall, I think the effort is a good one. And they're bringing in disadvantaged communities and environmental interests into the discussion. So they're trying to figure out how they're going to address the impacts of, you know, having to manage sustainable groundwater, because you just can't pump as much as you want. So I think it's an interesting effort. We'll see where it goes.
Well, the webinars are important. You know, before the show, we were all talking about, you know, the new way forward is virtual, where everybody's not traveling, and the best way to do it is over the internet webinars. So that's popular. And tomorrow I'm doing, for the 14th year, we're our company, the Thorold Company, is sponsoring the San Bernardino and Building Industry Southern California Water Conference, which is in Ontario, California, except it's not going to be in Ontario. It's going to be on the internet. So I'm leading the panel on technology and innovation, and it should be a good conference. We'll start at 9. If people have registered for that, they can get an access code and listen to and actually watch the speakers. So we're all going to be doing it remote, so it's going to be interesting. Whoever's managing that webinar with all the people involved in this is going to be pretty interesting, because I don't do the technical end of how the webinars go and are put together and how they operate and all that. So I assume it's cumbersome, but when you got, you know, maybe 25 to 30 speakers and other things with questions calling in, that's going to be kind of tough, but looking forward to that. So, Chris, you know, I started asking you about the water assessment methodology development for safe drinking water programs, and I was reading your article today, and I know at the end of it it said, or in the middle of it said, that there will be a quorum for the board members from State Water Board, but they're not taking any action. So is this kind of like throwing everything out on the table, and then they're going to gather that all up and then see which ones they should attack?
Well, you know, what this is this is a staff workshop. And, you know, the State Water Board are five people, and they work pretty much full-time. But the State Water Board's authority is very, very broad. I mean, they have water, they have not only water rights, but, you know, contamination responsibilities and stuff. So there are lots and lots of workshops and staff things. So, you know, the fact that there may be water board members there, they're just saying, you know, this is not a decision-making time. Because when it comes to government, if the government, if a state agency, or I think even, I think this applies to all public agencies, is going to make a major decision, then you have to say, you know, this is a decision item. We're going to be voting on this tonight, so people know that. So, you know, there's a standard disclaimer that goes out, you know, that when the state board staff having a workshop, that it's not a decision item. It's an informational item. It's taking input from the public. And, yeah, you know, they're trying to, they're working on setting up the safe and affordable drinking water program. The SAFER acronym, I actually looked at it, I think, yesterday. It's actually Safe and Affordable Equitable Resilience. Oh, no, Safe and Affordable Funding for Equitable Resilience. That's how they get to the SAFER thing. But this is really the Clean Drinking Water Program for small communities that the Governor Newsom signed at the beginning of the year. And there's numerous workshops. They're looking for the communities to become involved and community members to become involved. So there are numerous workshops and webinars, and they're putting together different committees, a committee that will oversee the funding and a committee that oversees the selection of what projects and stuff. So there's a lot of moving parts to to this program. It's really hopeful that they're finally going to get to a point where maybe we can actually be serving clean drinking water to virtually everyone in the state. A lot of these people that are affected really are the farm workers in the Central Valley, the people who pick our produce that we buy in the markets. And it's really a very sad situation that these people see water that's better than the water coming out of their taps being applied to the crops that are grown that they pick. So yeah, it's a great program. I think Newsom selected this because it's a solvable problem, and I think he wants to finally solve a problem that, you know, really no one stepped up to the plate to solve up until this point, at least in terms of governors, as far as I know. So,
well, you're absolutely right. Mr. Davies, what's of interest to you this week? Chris?
That was something that's close to your location, Rob.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I saw, you know, and I'm having you know, family members into Phoenix area. So have you noticed, or did you expect, this being your first summer in Arizona there, that you would have much more of the monsoonal kind of weather that's traditionally this time of year, July, August, in Arizona? I mean, there's virtually hasn't been any.
No.
Oh, they're calling it a non-soon.
Non-soon.
Yeah. Monsoon.
Yeah. That's their
non-soon
term? Non-soon. So, yeah. Chris, what, I mean, I know a couple of things on the Daily Digest for that. What's your take?
You know, things are changing. we can't, there's this concept called stationarity where, especially in terms of the climate and the weather, we want to look upon the past as if that is going to shine a light onto the future. And that's not becoming the case. And Arizona gets a bunch of its water supply, and, you know, it's it's ecology, it's ecosystem, is, you know, time, they usually get these monsoons at this point. And this is the time of year when we usually here in Southern California get to get all sweaty and muggy, you know, because we have all this moisture in the air. But it's an important water source for Arizona. So it's, you know, not showing up, it's meant hotter weather. So, you know, there you go, Rob.
It's pretty dark in the skies right now, and windy, and it feels very humid out. So we'll see. Maybe I'll be lucky and it'll fill my pool up, since they haven't finished it yet. I got this big hole with cement in it. So anyway,
there's a meteorological feature called the Sonoran High.
Yes.
It is now repositioning itself in the same place, in the place it should be, in order to predict to bring on the monsoon kind of weather. Up until now, mid-August, by the way, that's where we're at. Up until now, it's been parked much farther east in the southern continental United States, and I think that's been to blame for the lack of monsoon. It's also in the favor of the West Coast in that it hasn't been a blisteringly hot summer yet, but now that high is moving farther west over the Four Corners area and over Arizona, right where you're at. Looks like we might be opening the door for some more moist, humid weather coming to Arizona.
Well, I'm prepared. Like I said, it's
you have your here, but in your Wellington boots?
I have to go buy those. I have to put gutters up. They didn't put that on the new house they built here. So everybody tells me I'm going to need that because it's going to be heavy downpour. Well, when I was back in California a couple of weeks ago with you, Chris, my wife said it rained really hard one day, and you couldn't believe the amount of water in the short period of time that we saw. But
yeah, it comes
luckily,
all at once. That's the issue with that.
Yeah. Luckily, the drains that the builder put in are great, and everything just siphoned off real well. So exciting about that. So at least we're safe on that time.
So, Chris, another thing that struck my caught my eye on the latest post, anyway, when I was looking at it, is the new I don't know where it comes from, actually, State Water Resources Control Board, I would imagine, on a lot of regulations for wineries in terms of how they treat or how they dispose of and treat their wastewater from here going forward. Did you see that post?
Oh yes, and you know, I mean, cleaning up discharges is expensive, unfortunately. And, you know, I mean, this is the big issue. This is water quality for, you know, everybody. So, wineries are going to get some new regulation regarding their discharges. And, no one's happy about it. Who is happy to have extra regulation, I guess? But these things are important, especially up, you know, if you travel up into the Napa and Sonoma area, there's just a lot of vineyards, a lot of wineries. There's a lot of that kind of activity going up there. So it's important. They're not happy about it. It's expensive because cleaning up, you know, discharges is always expensive. But, you know, sometimes that's where you got to move forward. So,
but doesn't that apply to farming and everything else?
Well, you know, wastewater discharges from wineries are a little different than farms and fields, where you're, you know, if you have a field, you're mainly concerned with water running off the field and what pesticides, you know, fertilizers might be in that water running off the field. Wineries that are, you know, producing wine have a discharge of wastewater that's a little bit different than what comes off the field. So it, you know, kind of gets its own treatment, shall we say.
I'm just thinking of somebody with cows, maybe 2,000 herd of cows, where's all their stuff go?
Yeah, you know, those are a big thing. But, you know, if you notice in farming areas, at least in the Central Valley, the areas where they have cows on the land ranching, is a little bit different than, you know, where they have the fields that grow the vegetables we eat. There's a problem with mixing those two sorts of things up. Interestingly enough, you know, there's lots of oil and gas well drilling in the middle of agricultural fields. And that it doesn't seem to be a problem, although they're now trying to look at this and figure out, well, you know, how close can an oil or gas well be to a residence and be safe? They're trying to figure out those setbacks. It's a different thing.
Yeah. Do the farming people or anybody, I remember, was it a couple of years ago? I think it was North San Fernando Valley where they had those wells that weren't capped right, gas valves, and everybody got sick at a Porter Ranch.
Yeah.
I think
Aliso Canyon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do
they have to notify the people that when they're buying a home that's there?
You know, that I don't know, but I will tell you this. My attitude about this is, if you're buying a property, I do believe you need to do your due diligence and you need to look at everything around there. And you can't count on your real estate agent or anyone else to do that for you. You need to do that yourself. But yeah, you know, Aliso Canyon was a big natural gas leak, and you know, there are oil wells and natural gas wells. I mean, they're really all peppered, especially here in L.A. I mean, L.A. used to have a lot of oil production, and they still do. Down, I think, in what, Pilot Hill, or there's some place sort of down south of Los Angeles downtown, I think, that they're still doing. Bunker Hill? I can't think.
Pilot Hill in Long Beach.
Yeah. There is a lot of oil and gas. We have a lot of drilling going on up here in Santa Clarita. You drive down the 14 and you'll see them going. It's a lot of oil and gas in L.A. And there's a lot of it in Kern County. You know, Kern County is one of the highest producing oil and gas counties in the entire nation. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily realize that unless you go to the western side of Kern County up to the base of the Coast Range, and then you will see like Disneyland, like all sorts of oil wells drilling and gas wells and pipelines going all over the place. It's really quite extensive. And oil and gas production is actually an important part of Kern County's economics. But you wouldn't necessarily realize that until you really take a closer look.
So. You remind me of two news people that shows, Ralph Story, who covered L.A., and another gentleman who passed a while back, and he used to have shows on PBS. You know, I tell you, you know more about what happens all over the place, which is amazing. I'm surprised you haven't written a book.
Oh, I don't have time to write a book. There's so much going on.
there is. Hey, what's this thing I hear about this global methane emission and they're complaining that it's due to the wetlands and things of that sort?
You know, it's such a dynamic situation. They're trying to figure out how to sequester carbon, and you know, they concentrate on, everyone looks at carbon as a greenhouse gas, but there's also been methane is another greenhouse gas, which could be even more powerful than, you know, the what they're trying to control in the first place, the carbon. So it's like wetlands are actually being, there's a bit of a debate, you know. They're trying to set up carbon sequestration as a viable way for farmers to earn income, to turn, you know, wetlands into, you know, to sequester carbon. But there's a lot of questions as to how effective that is. And they're doing a lot of experiments. And this is, you know, really scientific stuff. I mean, they have flux monitors, and all sorts of things they put out in the field to monitor all the stuff that's coming off the wetlands or whatever, so they can try and determine, if you do certain things to a piece of land, will it actually sequester carbon? And wetlands is one of the places where they think that might work, but they have such conflicting scientific information on that. One set of studies sort of showed that sometimes in certain types of years, like dry years, it does really well. Or, sorry, wet years, it sequesters a lot of carbon. But in dry years, a different story. It doesn't do so well. So trying to figure out how much wetlands, you know, can sequester and be useful to climate change is hard. And now they look at methane and say, well, maybe it does this, but it's, you know, methane is starting to become seen as a even more powerful greenhouse gas emission than, you know, the carbon dioxide. So,
well, they blamed it on the cows in California, so now they'll blame it on the birds.
I know. Well, they say, you know, cow farts are methane emissions, so.
Yeah.
Luke Desmond joining.
Can't blame it on the bird.
Wow. All right, well, we're up against our commercial. Hi, Lou. We're going to bring on in just a sec. We're going to go to our commercial break. We want to thank Chris Austin. Chris, you're always welcome to stay, but I know you're probably going to make dinner. So.
Yeah, I got a family to feed.
You got family to feed, but we do appreciate it. And for all our listeners, if you want to know about water news in California or anywhere else, go to mavensnotebook.com. Be a sponsor, be a subscriber. It's a great thing. You get it every single morning, at least I do. When I wake up, I hit my computer, it's right there. And great articles. And, you know, the problem is you have so much news. If I sit and read the whole thing, I get caught up in it. The next thing I know, it's like an hour and a half go by, and I got to get to work. So.
But you're so much smarter afterwards.
Well, yes, but that's why we have you on every week, so we can even be more smarter. So
yeah,
we do appreciate that.
Sign up for the daily emails. They're great.
Yes. So don't forget, Chris, and our listeners, where our show will not be on next week because it has been preempted by NBC, who's going to carry the presidential deal with Biden and Harris, their convention. So we'll be back in 2 weeks, but our show will continue in just 2 minutes, and we'll take a little break. Chris, thank you again for being on, and we'll talk to you next week, and most importantly, be safe.
Okay, good evening, everyone.
Take care, Chris.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. Eco Series products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied, fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied, fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco Solvent Cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
Hey there. Looking for new ways to get more out of your workday? First step is to use your head. Step two, use all your heads. New Oregon Gator Speed Load Trimmer Head System adds time savings to every one of your trimmers. Once it's installed, you can pop in these handy discs in 20 seconds or less whenever it's time to reload. That means you can leave all the stringing and spooling back at the shop. Plus, the line is designed to last twice as long as traditional line, because less reloading means less wasted time. You might just say this Gator Speed Load system is a heads-up way to make your business more profitable. See what I did there?
KCAA.
All right, welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone with Rob and Chris, and hope everybody's doing good. And we have a special guest on tonight, a gentleman I've known for quite a few years, but he's a super person. His name is Lou Desmond. He's the president of Desmond and Lewis, an excellent PR firm. And he was also, and is still, the host of the Lou Desmond and Company radio show on News Talk Radio, AM 1440. And this guy's been around and knows a lot about what's going on in the industry and so forth. So, Lou, we'd love to welcome you back on the show.
Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. I don't know if you ever met Chris before. Did you ever meet Chris Davey before?
No, I don't think so.
Actually, there's a point where we did talk. I can't remember the event. I was with the Venerable Mike Barron at the time, and we were introduced.
Oh, maybe it's a water conference or something like that. So
there's one of those. I can't remember when, but at least I've seen you in person.
Well, then you know I have a face for radio, so glad to be here.
That's why we're all in radio.
That's
exactly.
But I know you've been involved in all kinds of things. Maybe you can tell our listeners a little about your background, and you know, you were in government kind of work where you worked for some famous people and the PR stuff and things. Can you give us a little brief history of bring us up to date?
Yeah, I've been in the public relations industry and working for the development industry, building industry association, home builders, commercial developers for. Oh, almost three decades. I'm that old now. And my grandfather was a California state senator. My family has been in the dairy business in Central California since the early 1900s. And live along the Delta in the Galt area. That's where our Desmond Ranch was. And the Brannix and the Degonis and the Fitzgeralds were Italian, as you can tell. I remember many, many years ago, my grandfather telling me, in California, I'm sorry, it was my dad, not my grandfather. Grandfather passed away right before I was born. Earl Desmond, my dad, Lou Desmond Sr., saying, well, in California, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting over. And, maybe that was Jesse Unruh or somebody else who first said that, but it's certainly true in California. And as you know, I bought some property in Washington and I split time between California and Washington State now, which is where I am right now. I'm on the back porch of my property in Washington State, where thankfully it's only 72 degrees tonight, as opposed to like 100 degrees where it is in California right now. But we have water issues here in Washington, but it's different. It's too much water, not enough water.
Wow. What have you noticed? Because I know you and I have been involved in a lot of the, like the San Bernardino Conference and some other, you know, with builders and developers, as you said.
Which, the Water Conference is tomorrow that my wife runs every year for almost 20 years now for the Building Industry Association.
Yep, in San Bernardino County. It's an awesome event, and we talked about it a little bit at the beginning of the show. But, yeah, it's something that goes on. It brings a lot of stakeholders, a lot of professional people as well as general public can come. And what's really nice, they get to ask questions of these people right on the spot. Nothing's filtered, nothing's that. Now, tomorrow's going to be a webinar thing, so I don't know how that's going to go. I have my questions that I'm going to ask my panelists, but it should be interesting. I know one year when Chris was with me, some lady got mad at one of the water agencies, and we couldn't stop her. She kept on going and going and going, but it was hard to tell somebody to sit down and your time's up. I don't like to do that, but she had.
No, you don't want to be rude.
No, can't do that. Everybody is entitled to say their opinion, and I think it's good that people are allowed to have their opinion and say what they got to say. It's to me, it's rude when somebody who doesn't agree with you wants to stop you in your tracks and do that. But what do you see, Lou, from your perspective? Because I know that the show you have all kinds of legislative people on and business people and such. What do you see the differences in California? I know you said you got plenty of water, and here we don't. But what have you seen over the years that you think needs to be fixed in the top? If I told you you were a water czar today, what would be the three things that you would tell California to do and the three things you'd tell Washington to do? State of Washington.
Well, actually, it's not the similarities, Rob. I mean, it's not the differences, Rob. It's the similarities. Here in the county where I am now, right now where I'm sitting, is Lewis County, Washington. Lewis County, Washington floods every 7 to 10 years. We had a devastating flood in 2007, which wiped out many businesses, schools, homes in Centralia and Chehalis, which are the low-lying sort of bowl in the valley areas of here in this county. So there's too much water. When you get Pacific storms that get caught against the Mount St. Helens and the mountain ranges along there, it gets stuck, and then you have this ton of water that comes down. The Columbia River and other rivers overflow, and the areas get wiped out. And what they're talking about here is trying to build a water retention system that would still allow the fish to flow through and those things. And there's tremendous resistance from the left to building a water retention system, and everybody on the right is like, well, people have property rights. You can't just tell them they have to have their property that they've owned in their family, in some cases for 100 years, that they're going to have eminent domain, and they're going to have to move. And in California, you have the left saying, we have to flush all this water out through the Delta, and we won't build water retention systems for an entirely different reason. But at the same time, it's a left-right divide. In other words, everybody says, okay, look at the science. Look at the science. Well, okay, if we're going to look at the science, then there must be an objective answer, right? But nobody listens to the objective answer. They retreat to their corners, and here in Washington they say, we can't build water retention systems. In fact, we should be knocking down dams. And in California they're saying, we need to flush all this water out through the Delta. And in both cases, it causes chaos. Here in Washington, it floods. In California, it droughts. That's a problem.
Well, I don't know if they'll ever... You listen to the news every single day, and it's this constant, we want to do it our way, and then the other side says, we want to do it our way, and then nobody comes to the table and says, look, you can't have 100% of everything, but what can you compromise? Can you cherry pick the good pieces of some of this ideas and move for that instead of just taking positions where they don't want to do anything? I think that has to stop. We got to learn to compromise a little bit. The world will get a lot better off if we can compromise with each other. And yeah, and it's not surrendering. I don't look at it as that. It's just using common sense. What's going to be for the good of the people, for the good of the land, for the good of the water? What's the right way to do all of this stuff? And there has to be some agreement on these things. Otherwise, we're going to have this discussion 50 years from now, the same thing. Might be different issues, but it'll be pretty much the same arguments.
I remember in the 1970s, when I was a kid, having those cans of foam that you used to spray over. Remember, if it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down, right?
Yeah.
Right? That was sort of the thing. And then here in Washington, in the area where I am now, you have the flooding, and people are like, well, the people that live on the floodplain, they just have to be moved. And it's like, well, okay, wait a minute. Like you said, maybe there's areas of the floodplain that are super high risk that even if we did mitigation, it's still going to be super high risk. Maybe they have to move, and maybe there's taxpayer money that we can find to help them move. Right. And maybe in California, there could be a balance of we need to build more water retention and reservoirs, but everybody just retreats to their corners and says, no, this is bad, this is good. If you're not on my side, then you know what, blank you, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That will not work. It will never work.
Yeah. Chris, chime in.
I was just going to ask, so over time, and I'm assuming this is Southern Washington State you live in by the description.
Yes.
Who? Yeah, so, you know, a little bit familiar with that area myself, but have you seen global warming or, you know, the environmental issues impacting the Pacific Northwest weather? I mean, we've talked to people about this on our show before, and there's a relationship to California. You talked about building new water infrastructure in California, which is very much needed because the global warming has raised the average snow level higher every year, which means that even if the same amount of water continues to come in, we have to collect that water differently because it's not held in the snowpack as much as it was because the snow level has risen. And so the water comes just as precipitation and not as snow that slowly melts in the winter. So any impacts like that you're seeing in Washington?
Absolutely. So recently there was an environmental study that was released by the state of Washington that said, if you build this water retention system, you're going to reduce the fish stock over the X number of years by 90%. But look at the fine print, and it's actually global climate change that reduces the fish stock by an enormous percent based on their projections, because they're assuming the water is going to get this much warmer and there's going to be this much less spoilage. And because of all those reasons, there's going to be this depletion of the fish stock. And, oh, by the way, if you build this water retention system, it's going to contribute a small percentage to that. But in the study, they don't make that clear. In their top lines, they just say, the study says, if you do this water retention system, you're going to cause this massive reduction in fish stock. Well, it's not the water retention system that does that. It's the effects of global climate change that they are projecting. Now, in the state of California, you have similar sort of what I would call funny math or funny science that goes on that says, oh, if we don't flush these hundreds of millions of gallons of water out through the Delta, then all these fish are going to die. Well, okay, is that being caused by global climate change? Is that being caused by farming? And they don't break these things out. And so what we really have is a massive political divide that is making it impossible to solve solvable problems if people would just use common sense and come together.
Yeah, I think, Lou, you're just describing, right, you know, what is the state of state politics, so to speak, right? You've got all these point of views from you know, you say funny math and funny science. I couldn't agree with you more, actually. So you got all these stakeholders involved. All of them got a little different point of view, and all of them are going to support their supporters, their factions, right? Let's call it that, right? So and all of them are going to want to fight for their rah-rah cause, right? Whether it's fish or you know, hug the owls or whatever, hug the trees and love the owls and all that kind of stuff. And I support that. I'm really up for that. It just so muddies the water for and makes it more difficult for state legislation and people the agencies that manage and control these resources, it just muddies the water, makes it more difficult for them because, you know, everybody and their brothers, aunts, uncles, sisters, and pets have a point of view, right?
Right, and a farmer is going to have a much different perspective than a person that went to Berkeley and studied environmental resources, right? But we all actually want the same thing. I'm a hunter. I'm a fisherman. I am a person who raises animals on my property, chickens, cows. And I understand that there's a relationship between the environment and the land, and it all has to be managed. But we're not talking to each other in sensible ways. We're talking past each other. We're yelling at each other. We are telling each other we're evil, stupid, and wrong if you don't agree with my point of view from the chump. And that is a recipe for disaster. That means nothing moves forward. Nothing changes. And if nothing changes, California is going to continue to go through this cycle of drought. And where I live in Washington State is going to continue to go through a cycle of floods. Both things are unsustainable and stupid, but we're not talking to each other.
Yeah, right, yeah. So just as a side note, going back to when you first came on, I looked up this, whiskeys for drinking, waters for fighting over. It says here that Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
To bring that up, when he was a reporter, and he was reporting on Mulholland, he was out in the Owens Valley and reporting on the opening up the California Canal, and that statement appeared in his column.
So that's how far this goes back. And we're only getting, unfortunately, more polarized. And I blame social media. I blame the tribalization. I blame the media writ large and the fact that you either read the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. You either watch Fox News or MSNBC and CNN. And people aren't listening to each other, and we're not coming together to try to solve problems. What we're doing is trying to blame each other and shame each other into taking a certain point of view. And you know what? The environment doesn't care about your political point of view. The environment is going to do what it's going to do. And coming from a dairy and farming family, farmers know something that maybe everybody else doesn't really understand. The environment changes every year. You have heavy rain years, you have light rain years. You have drought years, you have flood years. And what you learn to do is live with it and mitigate it. But if all you're going to do is point fingers at people that don't agree with you from the jump, then you can't find a solution. Everybody has to learn to compromise. Maybe some people in the floodplain need to move to other places. Maybe there are ways in California that we can conserve water and store water that doesn't mean denying the Delta and the fish the water that they need. But we're not even having that discussion because we're so politically divided and allegiant to our team that those discussions have been made impossible. And those are the kind of things that I hope tomorrow at the Water Conference, people can have an honest discussion. I know people say, we need to have an honest discussion about race in this country. Okay, I'm just going to leave that there. We need to have an honest discussion about environmental resources in this country. And the fact that if you don't have water in the Central Valley for the farms in California, you can't feed the populace of the United States.
Yeah,
Rob, you got to have a point of view here.
Well, I do. I think it's important that people sit down, as we've always said, sit down and discuss these things. And look, there's so many different issues in water everywhere you go. But I don't see a lot of things happening. You know, when they want to build a desal plant, it takes 17 years from the time they propose it to the time it gets built. I mean, those things take a long time, and meanwhile, things change over 17 years. You know, we have an infrastructure of piping for water in California that's 100 years old, and they're bursting all the time. And, you know, I was just reading in Baby's notebook that there was, 16 in one city, there was 16 major breaks in the last couple of weeks. I mean, we got to put money to those. We, you know, the resource of water is the same water that's been here for millions of years. It's not going to get any more. Now, yes, technology is helping out. How do you get more water? How can you do atmosphere water harvesting and things like that? Using smart irrigation to reduce the amount of water you use and use it more efficiently. Those are important factors. But you still got, when it comes down to the different sides and different opinions, you know, California, if we all remember way back when, said by 2012, they're going to incorporate the state of California, make it mandatory that only smart irrigation controllers are going to be sold in California. Well, guess what? That law still hasn't, it's on the books, but nobody's enforcing it. In fact, smart controllers are gaining in popularity, but compared to standard regular irrigation controllers, they still, the plain ones sell more than the smart ones do.
Yeah, the spray and pray still sells more than everything else because it's cheaper. Why isn't there a subsidy to get homeowners and large property owners to use the smarter irrigation things that save water? I mean, there are common sense things we could do, but they're not being done because all we're doing is throwing darts at each other. It's just stupid.
Well, they had a cash for grass program here in California. Which they pay you $1 to $2 a square foot to remove your turf. And our own Inge Biscona went up to the California Irrigation Institute, presented a paper showing that the money that California spent to pay for people to take out their grass and how much water it saved compared to if they put that same amount of dollars that they paid out to the farmers for programs, they would have saved 20 to 40 times that much more water with the same amount of dollars they would have spent. That's where the
I'll just say, Rob, cash for grass where I live might mean a totally different thing than what you're saying. But I understand, what you're saying. But again, it comes back to there are common sense things we could do if we could listen to each other. But everybody is retreating to ideological corners. I wish we could get past it. I don't know how we do. But I know that there are issues that have to be dealt with that we are simply not able to because we're so ideologically divided.
Yeah. I kind of think there should be a law saying that you have to come to everything that you bring up that's important. You have to come to an agreement about something in that. It may not be 100% that everybody agrees to, but you've got to do something of it.
Right. The interesting thing, they wrote the legislation up here in Lewis County about whether or not you get money for mitigation for the fish, for the environment, and for flood protection, is they said if all the parties can't come together and agree, then the $500 million you set aside, nobody gets a dime.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, we're coming up against the NBC News Hour.
All right,
we
gotta
clear out that. But before you go, because you have a good business as a PR company, how do people go ahead and reach you?
They can reach me at Lou at E as in dog, A as in apple, N as in Nancy, D as in dog, L as in lemon, T as in Peru, R as in radio.com. Name of the firm is Desmond and Lewis Public Relations, headquarters Redland.
And you got a website too.
Yep. DNLPR.com, and you can always follow me at the Lou Desmond Company radio program.
And it's a great show, and congratulations on that. Lou, I haven't seen you in a long time, but I appreciate you taking time to come on the show. And hopefully
you'll
be watching.
Appreciate the invite.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
And don't forget, next week, thank you. We're going to be off next week due to the political convention. So we'll be back in 2 weeks. And